Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. We're broadcasting this week from the Automotive Ethics Department here at Car Talk Plaza. Didn't know we had an ethics department, did you?
Didn't know anybody had one. I'm not sure it's ethics. It might be something like poetic justice or something. Here it is. This is from a woman named Jackie Cholette, or Cholet. Okay, I just wrote to ask
you. How do you know it's a woman?
I don't know. Maybe it's a guy.
Jackie Chan, a woman?
It could be Jackie. It could be a guy. I don't know. I just wrote to ask you a question about my 91 Metro Geo convertible. I could not resist telling you a story about this car. I bought this car in 1995 after selling my 94 Honda Accord EX. I used to be an emergency room doctor, and my husband and I, that's how I knew it was a woman. I must have read this letter before.
There you go.
And my husband and I had just bought a home close to my work. I decided it was silly to pay $400 a month car payments, so I sold the Honda. I took the money we had from the sale of the Honda and decided to buy a little cheap convertible. Okay, so we went looking, and in our hunt, we pulled into a used car lot because there was a yellow Mustang convertible there. The salesman comes up and says, "Great little car! That would make you a nice little car to drive." Well, my husband is yelling at me, "It's a piece of junk!" The salesman gets into the car to start it, and it won't start. He couldn't find jumper cables, and he continued to say, "This is a nice little car! Nice car!" The salesman was around 50-ish, about 100 pounds overweight, and chain-smoking all the time that he tried to start the car. I finally heeded to my husband's yells, and I left the car lot. 2 days later, I'm sitting at my desk, and the nurse comes in to tell me there's a patient to be seen in the cardiac room. She's in the hospital, the emergency room. A man with chest pains. I walk into the room, and there lies the used car salesman. He lies there, and he says to me, "Don't buy the Mustang." No joke. The nurse looked at me and said, "Do you know this man?" I guess he had some idea that he may be close to meeting his maker, and he wanted to set the record straight. Either that, or he knew I had the jumper cables in this case, and he was hopeful I would be able to find them. I love it. "Don't buy the Mustang." At least he was able to recognize her in his sorry state.
Yeah, well, that great.
That's got to be great.
That's a great story.
Well, Jackie, I guess that, is that ethics?
Sure, yeah. Deathbed ethics, I think. Yeah. Well, anyway, if you have something you want to confess, or maybe we want to confess, or if you have a question about your car, call us and spill your guts. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Kim, and I'm in Charlotte's Village, Virginia.
Who? When?
What village?
Charlottesville, Virginia. I'm at the University of Virginia.
Charlottesville.
Charlottesville.
Yeah.
And are you a professor, or are you still trying to graduate?
Well, I'm a graduate student here.
Still trying to graduate.
Yeah, in art history.
Kim.
That's probably why I'm having difficulty with my car.
Do you do any, what do you call it, OJT?
On-the-job training there.
On-the-job, yeah, I teach as well.
You do. So, yeah. I mean, they do actually try to prepare you for
the real world.
The real world and getting a job and all that stuff.
Right, for getting a job in art history.
Yeah, so you know the important phrases like, you know, would you like a chocolate shake with that or large fries?
I knew you guys were going to give me a hard time about
that. Oh, yeah.
Of course. I mean, gee whiz.
Boy, we are brutal, aren't we?
Yeah, are you guys going to give me a break here? Or
yeah,
what?
We'll give you a right answer.
Give you a break. What's up, Kim?
I have an engine overheating problem.
Ah.
It's a 1988 Dodge Omni with 157,000 plus miles on it.
Wow.
At this point.
A miracle.
It's had a new radiator put in. It's had a new radiator valve put in, and it actually was okay for a while after the radiator was put in until I turned on the heat. And when I started to turn on the heat, I noticed the engine gauge going up, and as soon as I turned off the heat, it went back down.
Ooh.
So I had a new thermostat put in. Then it happened again, and there was a new cooling sensor put in, and it's still doing it.
Whether the heat's on or not.
Whether the heat's on or not. It seems to be worse with the heat on a little bit, but it still goes up pretty quickly.
How quickly does it go way up? Let's assume the gauge is at the 1/4 position. The car is in the middle of warming up.
Okay.
You turn the heat on.
If I turn that heat on full blast, it'll be less than 5 minutes before it's almost up to orange.
Okay.
Boy, it's so counterintuitive.
Really?
Well, that's what people do, for example, when they're driving in the desert and their car begins to overheat, they turn the heat on. And they sit there and swelter while the engine benefits from having this heater core introduced into the loop, and the engine actually will begin to run cooler.
Really?
Really?
I mean, this whole thing is so bizarre that I have to question you, and I have to question your veracity.
What?
How sure are you that turning on the heat really does make it heat up more?
I'm positive. I've watched it.
Well, it may be coincidental.
Well, but don't forget, it might have been going up anyway.
Well,
so the reverse, how sure are you?
But then she claimed, I believe, that when she turned off the heat...
When you turned
exactly.
off the heat, it goes back
it
down.
It comes right back down to where it should be.
Did it plummet?
It plummets.
Is it possible that when you turn the heat off that you also do something else? Like
no.
you stop.
No.
Or you go faster. Or you get out of traffic.
No, because
Wow. Then we're going to have to believe you.
Yeah.
And
it was incumbent upon us to make sure of this.
Right.
More importantly, what?
We're going to have to make something up. Well, I can only tell you this.
Okay.
So far. I may think of something more convincing in a minute. But we had, I remember some years ago, we had a similar case with another Dodge Omni or some vehicle like it.
Mm-hmm.
And inexplicably, his temperature gauge would go bonkies. And we tried everything. We took the radiator out and had it tested. We put a new thermostat in. We changed the hoses, thinking that one of the hoses was collapsing.
Yeah.
And finally, in desperation, we removed the cylinder head and checked it for cracks, and in doing so, and finding none, replaced what evidently was a leaky head gasket.
Wow.
A leaky head gasket.
And that solved the problem. Well, I don't know if it solved it. We never saw the customer again. Is that, the equivalent of solving the problem?
I'd say so,
I'd
yeah.
say so.
Otherwise, you'd have seen or his lawyer. Yeah.
Well, that might be why I smell antifreeze smell.
I was heading in that direction. My next question was, have you been losing coolant?
Yes.
I love this.
And I didn't think of that before, but yes, because I've had to refill the overfill reservoir.
Okay, I've got it.
You've solved it.
I have got it.
Go ahead.
You are going to love... I could kill you! This is going to be so good. Here's what's going on.
Get it over with, because
you're going to love. You're going to say, how the hell did you figure that out?
The longer you applaud yourself, the harder the humiliation is going to be to accept.
Get this.
I'm ready.
Okay.
You have a leak such that it is squirting.
Oh, this is the most bogus.
That you have a hot coolant is squirting. Are you ready for this?
Onto the temperature.
Oh, the temperature gauge!
Oh, no!
And it's underneath the dashboard.
Underneath the dashboard.
I mean, this came to me unencumbered by the thought process. I could see it in a vision, like Edgar Casey. I'm telling you, take this to your mechanic.
Okay.
Tell him to look underneath the dashboard.
Under the dashboard.
He will find a squirting leak.
Okay.
Wow.
Kim, if this is right,
I hope this is right.
I will never hear the end of it.
I have to keep the car till I graduate. So.
It'll be fine.
Yeah,
okay.
Start loading up on courses.
And just make sure that you keep replacing the coolant, by the way.
Right, definitely.
Yeah.
This is it.
Okay.
Kim, we will have you back, I guarantee you,
okay.
on Stump the Chumps.
Okay, we'll see if it works.
And you are going to be so embarrassed. At the things that you've been saying to me all these years.
Well, for Kim's sake, I hope so.
Oh, I love you guys.
Good luck, Kim.
Thanks a lot.
See ya.
See you later.
Jeez.
You know how when you know you're right, I have absolutely no fear. I know.
Can we make sure that we save this? Can we archive this portion of the show? Can we get the video cameras in here? Can we get this on some kind of videotape?
I could actually see. I could see the stuff squirting.
Okay. 1-888-CAR-TALK.
And you have to admit, it accounts for every piece of data. Every piece of information
she gave.
Yeah,
that's the only frightening thing about it. 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello.
God, please make him be wrong. Hello, who's this?
Paul from Irwin, Pennsylvania.
Irwin.
PA. Which end of PA are you from?
Southwestern PA. We're about 25 miles east of Pittsburgh.
East of Pittsburgh.
East. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I know where you are.
Got it.
I don't have a problem yet, but it's only a matter of time.
All right, we'll make one for you.
I'll bet. Here's some background. In 1986, I bought a slightly used Buick Somerset. Now, it's got a 5-speed manual transmission. And I guess I'm easy on the clutch because I have 130,000 miles on it now with the original clutch.
Yeah.
And it's become a personal challenge to see how far I can make it go. Now, here's my dilemma.
Yeah.
I recently bought a used motorhome to explore the USA after I retire. And I don't laugh yet. And I want to tow the...
You are pressing the limits, Paul. I mean, you got 130,000 miles out of a Somerset.
Yes.
Which is about double what you should have got.
That's what
And now you want to hang a 10,000-pound motorhome on the back of it with a clutch that's got 130,000 miles on it.
No, I'm going to tow the Buick. I'm not going to tow the motorhome.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh, all right.
Anyway.
Oh, this is not a trailer. It's a motorhome with an engine in it.
Yes.
Ah, I misunderstood.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes, and I'm going to take the Somerset behind me to use as a jitney for local touring, but I don't want to end up stranded in the middle of nowhere because the clutch finally decided to die.
So you want to know how to assess how much life the clutch has left?
Well, I took it to my mechanic to have that done.
Ah.
And he told me there's no way to do that. He said there's no access to the clutch for a visual inspection. And I says, can this be true?
Well.
Don't need to have a visual inspection. Did he mention the laying on of hands technique?
No, I don't think he's that good.
Ah, see? Yeah, well, you call the right guys.
Well, you can certainly tell if the clutch is already slipping. Did he try that?
Is this the...
The stall test.
Yeah, drive up to a utility pole and try to go.
Yeah.
I haven't done that. But is that the only way to test that?
Well, that's the only way to actually test, yes.
Oh.
And the test is you try to pull the motor home with the car.
Starting out in fifth gear.
For those that don't know, the stall test is simply you pull the car's front bumper up to some immovable object. Like
your mother-in-law.
like a huge tree.
Yeah.
And then you put the thing in high gear. And you try to drive the thing away. You let the clutch out.
And you give it, a lot of gas.
Give it as much gas as you can stand. And the engine should just, boom, stall right out.
Yes.
And if it doesn't stall right out, or if it takes a few seconds for it to stall out, then your clutch is beginning to slip. And if it doesn't stall it out even after many seconds, then your clutch is already slipping badly enough so that you should replace it.
And you won't make it home.
Uh-oh.
I mean, we can give you some clue. What kind of driving have you been doing for these last 12 years that you've owned this car?
Stop and go.
Stop and go.
Stop, yeah.
Well, my philosophy about things like this is this clutch should have gone out at about 80,000.
Yeah.
The fact that it didn't means it's probably going to last forever.
Here we go.
Are you with me, Paul?
See, now, I thought what he was going to say was it's already gone far beyond what it should have gone.
That's right, and that's why.
Wait a minute, that's not what I thought you were going to say. What I thought you were going to say, and therefore, it's ready to go.
It is.
Therefore, why wait? That's usually what you say. Why wait?
I've had an epiphany.
you would normally say, it's going to need a new clutch. You're going to wait until you break down someplace in Arkansas?
Yeah, no, well, don't you remember the guy that called us? I'm trying to remember his name. Dave from Bemidji.
Oh. Dave from Bemidji, yeah. Minnesota.
And he drove like to the North Pole and back
did.
On a car that had 200,000 miles and
300.
He wasn't fazed because he knew if it lasted that long, then it was going to last forever.
That it was charmed.
And your clutch ain't going to go either.
Well, that's good news.
I think so. Do the stall test. And don't forget, the fallback position is you just tow the car
back
with the motorhome.
That's a possibility.
So don't worry about it. I'm with my brother on this. I say just do it.
Now, what's more likely to happen is that the hitch will let go, and that car will go fly. You'll be in Rocky Mountain National Park, and you'll say, Martha, I think the car is gone.
You know, that would only happen if you were going up a long, steep hill.
That's when it's going to happen.
That's the only time that would happen. Well, so you can see it going all the way. You can see it in the rearview mirrors.
Paul, have a
great... I'm going to have to mount the camcorder back there to catch that one.
Yeah. Have a great time and send us a postcard.
I'll send you several.
There you go.
That'll be great.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Bye.
All right. Look, before we take a break, I need to remind everybody that in just a few minutes, we're going to answer last week's puzzler.
Last week's puzzler.
Do you happen to remember it?
I do. Not. Unfortunately, I do not.
No. Well, it was about a guy sailing around the world all by himself.
Ooh. Without HBO?
Yeah, believe it or not, he was. And he needed to come up with an ingenious mechanical solution quickly, or he'd find himself passing through the digestive system of a shark.
Sounds dramatic.
And painful. And we'll be back with the solution and lots more car questions, too, in just a minute.
So please don't touch that dial.
Four wheels humming down Highway 1, and it's going to be a mighty long night. The setting sun, I got the engine gunning. In the morning, I'll be holding you tight. Heading out of Portland, going down to Boston, Beantown, such a pretty sight. My car's an old beater, no radio or heater, but the engine's running all right. This old car is a lot like me. A little trouble starting in the early morning, puffing and a puffing and the ball joints squeak. But when we get a rolling, we're a silver streak, a genuine red line flying antique.
And even though Punxsutawney Phil grabs some sound insulation and dives back down his hole as soon as he hears us say it, this is NPR National Public Radio.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a dentist and want to remind your patients there are things more painful than a root canal.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's puzzler.
I can hardly wait.
Well, this happened to be from my Uncharted Waters series, and it was sent in by a listener named Tony, who relates the following story.
Yeah.
Ready? Pay attention now, because there's a lot of stuff in here that you may find relevant.
Really?
Maybe.
It's just buried.
deep.
Okay. I'm with you. Go ahead.
In 1968, a British sailor named Robin Knox Johnston set off on an around-the-world voyage. He sailed from England, you know, down the Atlantic coast of Africa, around South Africa, past Australia, across the Pacific, around the bottom end of South America, then back up the Atlantic to merry old England.
Huh.
He covered like 30,000 miles in 313 days, becoming the first person to sail single-handedly, non-stop, around the world.
He must have really wanted to get out of the house.
I guess so.
Hon, I'll be back in 313 days. Don't wait up for me. I can see it now.
Now, back in 1968, sailors didn't have iPhones with GPS. Navigation was performed the old-fashioned way, you know, with sextants, looking at the stars, you know, using charts, rulers, dividers, and, oh, yeah, some lucky guesses. And the only form of communication that Robin had was a radio, which was powered by, you know, lead-acid batteries. And those batteries were charged by a little 3-horsepower gasoline engine connected by a fan belt to a small generator.
Sure.
Well, at one point, he tried to start the charger engine for a routine charge of the batteries, but it wouldn't start. Foolishly, he dismantled the engine, cleaned the various parts that he thought were responsible, reassembled it, and guess what?
Still wouldn't start.
Right. So he started to get desperate, and he decided to do what? Read the owner's manual.
Really desperate, I guess.
Well, the manual told him that it was essential that he set the ignition points and spark plug gaps correctly. Each needed to be set at exactly 15/1000ths of an inch. And failure to set these gaps correctly would mean that the engine would run poorly and inefficiently, if at all. And that would mean he'd run out of gas too soon, lose communication, and die a horrible death involving the digestive system of the aforementioned shark. So Robin checked his onboard toolkit. He had wrenches, saws, screwdrivers, but what he needed was something called a feeler gauge.
Yeah.
Well, now for those who don't know about such things, feeler gauges are strips of metal of a given thickness, and printed on them is what the thickness is. So you hopefully have one that says 15 thousandths of an inch, and you use it to measure the gap between the two surfaces, like the ignition points.
Yeah.
And without a feeler gauge, Robin just had no chance of measuring this gap of 15 thousandths of an inch.
No.
So he cursed in frustration and resigned himself to losing his radio and dying a horrible and lonely death with seagulls picking at his carcass. Well, that night, as he sat down with his diary to write about the day's events and his certain demise, he had an inspiration, and he figured out how to measure that gap of 15 thousandths of an inch using only the items that he had on board that I mentioned in this little narrative.
Yeah.
Well, how did he do it?
Whoa.
Well, here's what he did. He used his ruler, which we mentioned earlier because he used charts, rulers, dividers.
Yeah.
And he measured the thickness of his diary book.
Oh,
right?
Oh, how good it is. I can see it all coming.
And it happened to have, he measured an inch of thickness.
Yeah.
He counted the number of sheets of paper. There were 200 of them.
Perfect.
So each one was what, 5 thousandths of an inch?
Yeah.
Stuck three of them together? And that's why he lived
15.
To tell the story.
That's good.
Pretty cute, eh? So who's our winner?
Our winner this week is Amy Jensen from Arlington, Texas. And for having her answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Amy's going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which she can get a copy of our latest CD, Tales of the Brothers Grime.
Indeed. Now, this is a collection of stories that we've told on the air over
the
years.
There are some beauties in here.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, like the time you accidentally waterproofed your butt.
Hey, I thought it was moisturizer. Come on. You're telling me you've never made that mistake?
No. What else is on this album?
Well, there's a story of your first near court-martial in the U.S. Army.
Which one was that? The kitchen incident?
No. This is when you were shouting bang, bang, so you wouldn't have to bother loading and cleaning your rifle.
I remember that. Everyone will go on pass this weekend except Private Magliozzi.
Well, that album, Tales of the Brothers Grime, is yours, Amy, if you want it, for being this week's Puzzler winner.
Congratulations, Amy.
Now, if you didn't win, stay tuned because we have a new Puzzler still to come today, but first, more car questions. Are you ready?
Of course I'm ready. Don't I look ready?
No. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, I'm calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
And who are you?
My name is Shanta Ness.
Shanta?
Yes.
That's S-H-A-N-T-A?
That's it.
What a sweet little name that is.
Thanks.
And from whence does the name Shanta come?
It's actually a Sanskrit name from
sure.
India.
Sure, it's Indian, of course.
Yes, it
Absolutely.
Means peace.
Peace.
Yeah, I've been very lucky to have such a nice name.
Shanta. You know, I was just the other day, speaking of Indians, I was bemoaning the fact that we haven't heard from Arup Gupta, who has to have had the most mellifluous name. You may not remember this guy. I don't know if you've ever listened to the show before.
Yes,
but
I have.
A while ago, we had a caller whose name was, are you ready? Arup Gupta.
That's an excellent Indian name.
I mean,
it's
a mantra.
They come.
It's a mantra, Arup Gupta.
Arup Gupta, yeah.
Wow. So now right. Shanta and Arup, will be next.
Arup Gupta in Hindi means broken down Chevy. Anyway, Shanta, what can we do for you?
Well, I have an 86 Honda Accord LX. And it's got 165,000 miles on it. It's an excellent car. Mm. However, recently the idle has been going downward. That is, when I'm just stopped at a stoplight or idling still, it idles at about 750 to 1,000 RPMs, and I kind of have to keep my foot on the gas to keep it from stalling. And it was my understanding that this is not a terribly difficult thing to fix yourself.
Really?
I guess maybe I was
really
told
to what?
Incorrectly.
Well, I mean,
that's all true.
Adjusting the idle is easy or not easy?
No, well, adjusting the idle is relatively easy. It does require taking the air filter off, which is a little bit difficult, and finding the right screw to turn.
Yeah.
And once you've done that, you may temporarily solve the problem.
Yeah, the trouble with adjusting the idle is that it's like touching up the x-rays.
And there's no reason for that screw to have ever moved.
Right.
So if the idle used to be correct and it's now incorrect,
right,
something else is going on.
Something
it
else
seems
is going
to be sporadic as well. It's not always
That's even worse.
That's worse, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's even
kiss
worse.
Of death. Boy,
yeah.
It's been really nice talking to you.
I guess I'll go get a whole new car.
It's the trouble to see now. If it's sporadic and you increase the idle speed, then sometimes it's going to be idling too fast.
Right.
And the real question is, why is it doing this?
And if you had said that it's consistent, I might have said, the timing could be off, and that could be a result of someone that timed it incorrectly, or a stretched timing belt could cause that same problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's sporadic, it leads me to the carburetor.
Okay.
Don't go there.
Yeah,
as
I
say,
don't
go there.
No, and this carburetor is the right age to have a condition called low float level.
Okay.
Hmm.
Low float level is the result of a float that becomes saturated with gasoline, and as a result, it sinks too low and allows too much gasoline to enter from the float chamber into the body of the carburetor and causes minor flooding.
Okay.
And minor flooding can cause the thing to eventually stall out on you if the flooding becomes serious enough.
Right.
Which it's...
Would there be other symptoms of the flooding, like typical flooding symptoms, like gas smell?
Yeah, gas smell. Or when it does flood.
Spark plugs that might be getting sooty and black, but that's you wouldn't notice that.
Right.
And when it does begin to flood badly, it will be difficult to restart.
Okay.
So I don't think I'd worry. I mean, you've got 165,000 miles on it.
Yeah,
and a new carburetor for this only cost about $800. But you can get this. You can get this one rebuilt.
All right, I love your advice.
Great.
See you, Shanta.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi guys, this is Sean up in Montreal.
Sean,
with
as in Sean Connery?
No, the American way.
Shawn.
That's it.
And where are you calling from?
Really,
Montreal.
Yeah, heard of it.
What are you doing there?
My wife works for a company up here.
Draft dodger.
So she, that's right, with a beard and a ponytail.
Yeah.
So what's up?
So how's your French? I mean, have you found that you can't exist in Montreal without speaking French?
Oh, you can get by if you want, but it's certainly knowing French makes it.
But if you don't want to speak to anyone, you can get by. I found that my most recent visit to Montreal was rather unpleasant.
I don't know why. The people up here are fantastic. They've been great to me, and... You must have just got, I bet you got a transplanted Frenchman.
Yeah, it's possible, too.
There's a lot of them up here.
Yeah.
Boy, they can be really rub you the wrong way.
Yeah. I wouldn't even let them touch me. So what's going on, Sean?
What kind of a GM car do you drive?
I have a 93 Dodge Caravan.
Hey, you know, I knew it.
But when I turn on my blower motor for the defrost, I'm getting a strange mystery sound. And it doesn't matter what speed I put the blower motor on. In the background, there is this sound here.
Nice.
I love it.
And
excellent.
It only occurs when I have the blower motor on the defrost or when I've engaged the air conditioner. That's it. And then every once in a while, I get one of these.
And that's your wife in the back seat.
That's right, laughing at me.
Hey, your mother-in-law.
That's right, as I beat against the dashboard.
Wait, in other words, if you turn on the blower and you just have heat coming out of the floor vents.
Either heat or no heat, if I'm using it just to blow cool air in from the outside.
Yeah, it doesn't do it.
It doesn't do it for the floor vents or the ones on the dash in the middle there.
Yeah.
It doesn't do it.
Yeah.
What you don't realize is that when you put the defroster on, you are turning on the air conditioner.
Aha.
Aha.
Well, let me just tell you one more thing that happened a couple of weeks ago.
Mm. I'm satisfied just getting this far.
My air conditioner lost its charge.
Yeah.
So the compressor's engaging, but no more cold air is coming out. And I don't know if this is related.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
It is. You are, what you are hearing is the slow... and soon-to-be painful death of the air conditioner compressor.
Oh, excellent.
Just what you wanted to hear.
I wanted you to tell me there was a mean Frenchman living in my...
No, I think what you're hearing is the air conditioner compressor trying to work.
Really?
But it's probably lost not only its Freon, but maybe its oil. So you're hearing the thing, or maybe it's just lost its oil. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can sort of confirm this by next time it happens, open up the hood.
Mm-hmm.
You know where that is, that thing out front.
The thing in the front.
Yeah, with the Pentagon on it.
And you know where the air conditioner compressor
is.
There's a belt wrapped around it.
Yep.
And when it's making the noise, if you put your ear near it, make sure you're not wearing a necktie that will fall down in the fan. You'll hear the noise.
And that's
loud and clear.
Uh-huh.
Actually, if you want to try something even more scientific,
mm-hmm.
you can find there is a wire that connects to the air conditioner clutch. It's the only wire that connects to the compressor at all.
Oh, okay. I know.
Pull it off.
You can pull that off.
If the sound immediately goes away, you're in Fat City.
Uh-huh.
Or you're dead. You're not in Fat City. You know what's wrong.
That's right.
And it's going to cost you a bundle.
Promise?
Yeah. But I think you need a compressor. Good luck, Sean.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, see
bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Monica from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Hi, Monica from Minneapolis.
Hi.
What's shaking?
Well, I don't have a problem, but have an observation that has led me to inquire.
Last week,
it was pretty cold up here, really cold, like the coldest it's been so far. And everybody's cars were billowing lots and lots of exhaust when it gets that cold.
Sure.
Right. So I was sitting on the entrance ramp to the freeway in the morning with a whole bunch of other cars, and there was this minivan sitting right up in front of me to the left, and it was billowing exhaust. And every once in a while, like every 30 seconds, little smoke rings would spurt out of its exhaust pipe.
Cool.
And at first, I didn't like quite believe what I saw, and I'm like, what is that? And I watched it again, and like six or eight smoke rings, well, pretty big smoke rings, would come popping out of the exhaust.
I've never seen that.
I've never seen it either. Well, and I was wondering, how can this happen? Is this an automotive miracle that this car was spurting out smoke rings? Because when I was...
No, this is a subliminal ad by R.J. Reynolds Tobacco.
Wow, that's cool.
You know, when you're taught to blow smoke rings,
yeah.
I thought you have to move your throat or your cheeks or your tongue. And
sure, it's not easy to do that.
Right. What you need in order for your car to blow smoke rings is some kind of a shockwave in the system.
Ah.
So instead of having a constant or relatively constant flow of exhaust coming out the tailpipe,
you got to have a puff.
You need to have something that interrupts it for a second, like an engine miss.
Oh.
Okay, so if one of the spark plugs doesn't fire once in a while, you'll get a miss, which will stop the steady flow, and then when it does fire, you'll get a buildup of pressure.
That's good, that's
and
it'll be very good.
Like the guy in Times Square on the billboard. Remember that billboard that was there forever and ever?
Isn't it there anymore?
The guy smoking a Camel cigarette.
Uh-huh. Must be still there.
Blow smoke rings. No, I think they took it down like in 1950. But I'm not sure. Anyway, I think that would explain it. But who knows?
That would explain it. And it's not smoke, by the way, Monica. It's actually water vapor.
Right, right.
Yeah, and other known carcinogens.
Right.
And unknown. Right. Known and unknown. I like that. Boop, boop, boop. I'm going to try it.
Okay.
Wait a minute. My car would do it all the time. It's missing constantly.
I'm sure it does.
It's just got to be cold enough so that you can see it. That maybe that's why we don't see it all the time, because it's got to be like 20 below.
Well, when it's 20 below, your car puts out the greatest amount of visible smoke because the steam that's being created in the cylinders is getting condensed back into water, eventually water, but in the process, water vapor.
Uh-huh.
So that's what you're seeing coming out the tailpipe is that water vapor. And because the engines aren't completely warmed up and hence their exhaust systems aren't completely warmed up, you're more likely to see it, I think, because engines will miss during the warm-up period.
Great. Well, cool. You answered my question.
Gee, thanks for calling, Monica.
First one today.
You're welcome.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, I need to take a break so I can fabricate check the new puzzler.
Fabricate check. That's like fact check, right?
Yeah.
Except you don't check facts. You check to make sure it is sufficiently obfuscated and misleading.
Exactly. We'll be back in a minute.
Let me tell the story, I can tell it all. about the mountain boy who ran illegal alcohol. His daddy made the whiskey, son, he drove the load. When his engine roared, they called the highway Thunder Road. Sometimes into Asheville, sometimes Memphis town. The revenuers chased him, but they couldn't run him down. Each time they thought they had him, his engine would explode. He'd go by like they were standing still on Thunder Road.
And there was thunder, thunder all over Thunder Road.
Thunder was his engine and white lightning was his load.
And there was moonshine, moonshine, twice the devil's thirst.
The law they swore they'd get him, but the devil got him first.
And even though hibernating bears wake up and swat at their radios whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
Yeah, okay.
Well, here it is. A few weeks ago, an elderly woman customer came into the garage with her elderly car. I think it was like an 85 Lincoln Town Car. Mm-hmm. Huge, huge. One of these cars that should be accorded nationhood and have a seat in the UN General Assembly.
Yeah.
Anyway, she's talking to Manny, the youngest of our technicians, and she's explaining to him what she wants done with her car. And, of course, I'm eavesdropping.
Of course.
And she says, there are two things that need to be looked at. One of them, she says, is that I need a tune-up. And he's been instructed, as have all the guys, to ask why. When someone says they need something, why do you need it?
Uh-huh.
And she says, well, she says, my mileage has been off. The engine seems to be laboring. The power's diminished. And I know I need a tune-up. And he says, ha-ha. Mm-hmm. And he says, okay. He says, how about the other thing? He says, oh, she said, my shift indicator is off. When I'm in park, it really says I'm in reverse. And when I'm in drive, it really says I'm in two. And he says, ha-ha, I know what's wrong with your car. He says, what's wrong is that you're not in the right gear, and you're in second gear, and that's why your mileage is off, and that's why the engine seems to be
sounds like it's laboring. Sure.
And she says, au contraire, little piston puss.
What do you know, you younger punk?
You young squirt. She says, I can feel all the shifts. I start driving, and it shifts from first to second, and then it shifts from second to third, and then if I stomp on the gas, it downshifts. And he says, oh, okay, back to square one. He says, how do you know the mileage is off? And she says, well, she said, I check it all the time. And he said, yeah. And he said, but you're only getting probably 7 or 8 miles to the gallon of this anyway. Why bother to check? And how would you really know what we're off? And she said, oh, no. She said, every month I take a trip to visit my mother-in-law in New Hampshire.
This elderly woman has an alive mother-in-law?
I didn't say she was alive.
Oh, she just
and
goes
he,
to
and
visit.
He listens, and he says, okay, uh-huh. And he says, yes. And she says, well, I noticed, in fact, on my return trip the last time, that when I got back, the thing seemed to be laboring. My mileage was terrible for the whole return trip. And I began to notice all these symptoms. And he looks at her, and he asks her a bunch of other, you know, irrelevant questions like, what color blue is your hair anyway? And then he says to her,
yes?
Whereabouts in New Hampshire does your mother-in-law live? And she says, oh, I don't know. It's like North Crunchy.
She said, I didn't know. I didn't say she was alive.
She lives in North Crunchy Granola, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And he then asks, does she live on a dirt road? And she says, why, as a matter of fact, she does.
Wow, this Manny.
Oh.
Oh, man, he's her. You should start calling him Hercule Poirot.
He's managerial material.
He is. God, he's good. Does she live on a dirt road?
And she says, as a matter of fact, she doesn't. It's a lousy dirt road with potholes, and I hate driving there.
Yeah.
And he says to her, I know what's wrong with your car. You don't need a tune-up, and one repair is going to fix everything.
Wow.
The drop in mileage, the poor performance, and the whole
the
shebang.
Laboring.
Shift. The whole business. And he says, that's going to fix everything. And she says, go to it.
Yeah. What a guy.
And what did he learn from this last question that enabled him to figure out what was wrong with her car? Now, mind you, he hadn't seen the car, of course.
It was parked outside.
He hadn't really looked at the car. He was just interrogating
her. Just based on the answers to her questions.
Now, if you think you know the answer,
his questions,
write it on the back of a $20 bill and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Ma 02238. Or you can email your answer to us from cartalk.com. Now, if you'd like to call us, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, this is Ron from Boniface, Florida.
Hi, Ron.
Ron.
Yeah.
Where's Boniface?
In the panhandle.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, sometimes it feels that way.
Well, so what's up?
Okay, I've got an 85 Volkswagen Vanagon.
Uh-huh.
It started running rough on a rainy day, like it was on stop and go in the city, like it was gonna chug out.
Uh-huh.
And then I got it finally on the highway, and it feels like I thought maybe I had something clogged in there, and it burned it out. But I was hearing a buzzing noise coming from underneath the frame, and I got out later, and it was the fuel pump, I think, making the noise.
Sure. Yeah.
I thought it was okay because it was running fine, and then of course on another rainy day it did it again. Only I couldn't get it restarted. So I towed it to a friend's house and ordered me another fuel pump eventually and put it in and finally got the thing going again.
Okay.
And it ran fine. And then it started doing it again. And now...
Wait, it ran fine even on rainy days?
Well, no, it started doing it again the next time it rained, 2 weeks later.
There you go.
I thought it was running fine.
Because the fuel pump wasn't going to solve that problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so, but...
And you notice we didn't let you get away with that.
Well, hold it. It gets better.
Okay, good.
So I'm listening to your show...
Yeah.
And I hear somebody else that has, like, the same problem. And you said it was a vacuum leak. And you said, okay, you know, they go to the garage and they have this little propane thing. And
yeah.
They squirt it around and they find it. So I'm thinking, okay, I can do that.
You don't have a vacuum leak, though.
Well, I wish I knew that before I took the camping propane bottle and the screwdriver to me.
and burned up all them wires.
So I'm standing there with the screwdriver in the propane bottle, and I'm squirting it. It's coming like a spray bottle, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, poof!
You got a little flame.
No, not a little flame. No.
Big flame.
Yeah, a big ball of orange fire.
Well, we didn't want you to spray the stuff straight from the bottle. You see,
I barely had time to blink.
Do you have any eyebrows left?
Well, they're growing back.
This isn't funny. This is serious business.
You have to laugh, otherwise it'll sue us.
Oh, I was blinking. I mean, when it was over,
don't you hear the disclaimer at the beginning of the show that says, don't try any of these things at home?
Yeah. When I was done, I was just standing there, and I wasn't sure I was still all there, you know, and I was looking around, and the propane bottle was about 20 feet away.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing how fast fire can move?
Oh, man.
Well, that's nothing compared to the crick in my neck I felt the next day.
Oh, yeah. No, that's true. That does happen, too.
So did you find... Did you find the vacuum leak or not?
I gave up after that one. I had to let it be, you know.
Well, I suspect, considering that you had a conflagration at the back of the vehicle there, that you have a bad spark plug wire.
Ah.
Yeah, which is what you had wrong all the time.
Oh, man.
And that's why it runs bad when it rains.
So because I could have just changed the spark plug wires.
You could have just changed the spark plug wires because what happened
and
is...
kept the hair on my face.
You could still have eyebrows. You could still have eyebrows and whatever little mustache you had before.
Yeah, I suspect you have either a cracked distributor cap or a bad spark plug wire.
Oh, well, that's a lot easier.
But I would start with those. And if it's giving you a problem on rainy days, that's more likely the problem than anything else, especially it ain't the fuel pump. We know that much now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And watch out with that propane.
Well, that's a one-time deal. I'm not that dumb.
Yeah, I'm glad you survived, Ron.
Well, my brother burned off 6 sets of eyebrows before he figured it out.
As a matter of fact, the first time it happened was on a Dodge Dart. I remember it to this day.
Revving up the gas and
revving
you
it up
over the.
Oh, I know. I had the valve cover off. I was adjusting the valves.
And poof.
And I cranked it. What a mistake that was.
And that ball of flame shot out. My brother went flying across the garage.
With his hair on fire?
With his hair on fire, we immediately started to figure out how we could divvy up his tools. See you, Ron.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for calling, Ron.
You're welcome. Bye.
888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Danny in the Dalles, Oregon.
Danny?
Yes.
In where, Oregon?
The Dalles.
How do you spell it?
T-H-E,
yeah.
Second word, D-A-L-L-E-S.
D-A-L-L-E-S.
Right.
And what are the Dalles?
It means actually the water running over the rocks. That's what you get when you have French fur trappers naming your town.
Ah, okay.
Ah, Pierre, les Dalles. Oh, oui, oui.
Exactly.
I'm with you now. Okay.
Okay.
So what's up, Danny?
Well, here's my situation. I just made the biggest automotive mistake of my life. Wow. And my husband
tuned
and
in a second time, huh?
Well, and my husband and I can't quite agree on how to solve it, and we agree that whatever you guys said would go.
Really?
Cool.
Yeah. So you have the power in your hands.
And how is your relationship with your husband otherwise?
Excellent.
So we should try as much as we can to help you out of the problem.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
We will.
Okay, I was in pregnancy-induced insanity about 4 months ago. 100-degree weather, 9 months pregnant, decided I needed to get rid of my little Honda Civic and buy a family car.
Yeah.
So I went out and bought an 89 Range Rover wagon.
Oh.
It's really cute, and it's cute. That was the only thing I liked about it.
Yeah, that'll do it.
And my husband is like a very conservative banker, and he wanted a plain Jeep, something reliable.
Yeah.
And I bought this horrible car.
Okay. So you went out and made a unilateral decision.
I did. I
you just bought it.
Oh, you did?
Accidentally. Well, that's a different story. I didn't mean to buy it quite the way I did, but I did.
But you bought it, and he comes home from work one night, and you say, honey?
Worse. I say, honey, we have to go pick up the car. We bought it from, not a dealership, from this little weasel. And he said, go pick it up at the dealership. I had him fix a few things on it. It's all paid for.
Ah.
So we go down to pick it up. It's in Portland, so it's 90 miles out of our way. We go pick it up, and there's a $400 balance for the new alternator.
Oh, so the sleazeball who was a used car salesman?
No, he used to be, but this is just a private dealership thing. And after it's all over, he says, you know, I used to be a used car salesman. I'm like, yeah, I
said...
can believe that. You know, he was a horrible person. But anyway, so I go pick it up at Land Rover. I get like a block away from the dealership, and the fuel light goes on. And I'm in downtown Portland, and these things get, like, what, 10 miles to the gallon, so I'm just frantic. And then I'm working my way to a gas station, and I get pulled over by a police officer because I have expired tags. This is all in my first hour of ownership.
Now, at this point, are you still in your pregnancy-induced insanity mode?
No. Now reality is slamming in. My husband is looking at me like I'm the biggest moron that ever walked the planet, and I'm having to agree with him. You know, this is bad.
Yeah.
But this is just $400, you know, just $400.
It's not much.
Right. Well, since then, we've probably spent $2,400 more.
Yeah.
In 4 months.
Yeah.
Alternator, speedometer, temperature switch, some electrical chip that was $1,000. Horrible things. And my husband just, and my husband doesn't fit in the car. Did I mention that? He's tall. He can't fit in the car. Yeah. Yeah.
So you really researched this, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Like I said.
You write consumer reports and got all the, you know, the information?
He wants to sell this car, or actually trade it in, at a huge loss, just to get rid of it.
What did you pay for it, really?
$16,500.
Yeah, and you've spent another $2,500 for stuff.
So you're now into this for $1,900, $19,000
rather. Yeah.
And what could you get for it on a trade?
Horrible. Like $11,000.
Go for it.
Trade it in?
Go
oh,
for
my
it.
God.
In a New York minute.
You're siding with my husband?
No, I'm not. Wait a minute.
I am.
Wait a minute.
Because the thing is, it has all these little expensive things that have gone wrong, but it's never left me stranded, and the horrible part is I kind of like it.
Well, here's the thing. You like it.
Yeah.
The mistake that you actually made.
Which one?
No, I think out of all of them.
Is you married a guy, first of all, that was too tall.
That was your first mistake, yeah. Now, here's the mistake you made was you bought a car like a pig in a poke.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard the show before, but we have said 100,000 times, if not more, you never, ever buy a used car without having a mechanic check it out.
Okay.
I mean, this vehicle does not have a stellar repair record, but it's not that bad. It's not great.
But
I would say it's below average.
It is below average. Yes, it is below average.
It is.
And when you have to have it fixed, it costs more than average.
And they don't have the parts generally, which means you have to wait longer than what?
Average.
Which means that you're without it longer than
average.
Yeah.
Which means you drive less than average.
Yeah.
And you have fewer chances to have accidents because you're not in the vehicle.
Right.
Often
this is
enough.
True. This is true.
Yeah.
I spent the holidays at the dealership.
You bought this thing on purely on emotion.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you want to keep it purely on emotion, even if logic tells you that you shouldn't.
Right.
And
I'm going to propose a compromise solution.
Are you?
That you and your husband agree on a time frame and money frame. That is, over the next, say, 6 months, you'll agree that if the expenditures are more than X, then you'll dump it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, something like, you know, $8,000, $10,000.
I was gonna say.
Yeah. I mean, give yourself some wiggle room.
But here's what I would do, Danny, is before you do anything, you can sort of make up for the earlier mistake by bringing it to your mechanic and have him check it all out as though you hadn't bought it yet. And he will give you a list of all the things that are wrong or imminently wrong.
Oh, I don't think I'd do that.
I mean, at least you'll know where you stand.
Yeah.
And then you can decide which things to fix right away if they're dangerous.
That's right. And then you can arrange for a home equity line of credit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not the worst vehicle in the world. It will serve you.
There's a motto for Land Rover. It's not the worst vehicle in the world.
Not the worst vehicle in the world.
There you go. That's an advertising slogan I ever heard
I'll
one.
I'll suggest it to them next time we meet in court.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Hey, good luck, Danny.
Okay.
We're glad we were able to cheer you up.
Oh, yeah.
See you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've squandered another precious hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy, cute, cute, cute Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin, the Barbarian, and David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our senior web blackie is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the D.C. green tea, kimchi, roti, yakchi, sweet pea, chablis, warm brie, confit, fat-free Grand Prix, is John Bugsy Lawler.
What? Could you repeat that?
Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our class attendance monitor is Julie Verley. Our snowboarding instructor from Sweden is Soren DeKeister. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luz Cruz. Our optometric firm is CF Eye Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the flash frozen newspaper vendors in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We're back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1005, shuffle through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com, or you can call the Shameless Commerce Division at 888-CAR-JUNK.
Also this week at cartalk.com, a way to get your car question answered.
Yeah, if you didn't get through to us on the air this week, you can always post your question on our discussion boards. They're patrolled by some, you know, pretty talented listeners who have a pretty good batting average in figuring out car problems.
What do you consider a pretty good batting average?
Tracked down and beaten up for misinformation no more than twice a week.
Setting the bar high, aren't we? That's our automotive discussion boards. Post your questions anytime at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though medieval reenactors pull up the drawbridge and load the catapult with rancid meat whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.